Welcome to the Addiction Solution Podcast. I'm Michelle Dunbar. Enjoy listening and watching as addiction experts Mark Sheeran and I cover controversial as well as helpful topics on addiction, how to move past it, and other related subjects. As two of the co-founders of the Freedom Model, Mark and I will give you a completely new perspective on the topics that matter to you. We will take to task the Recovery Society's lies and misinformation and replace them with facts, research, and the methods to move on from addiction struggles without 12-step meetings, rehabs, and the shackles of endless recovery. Let's escape the treatment and recovery trap together and learn to be free. Welcome to the truth. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Addiction Solution. I'm Michelle Dunbar.
And I'm Mark Sheeran. And we wrote, or co-wrote, The Freedom Model for Addictions, Escape the Treatment and Recovery Trap with our colleague, Stephen Slate.
And you will notice we rearranged and made a totally new studio. We are in the process of getting some new equipment. We're upgrading our podcast video so that it'll be a lot more dynamic and interesting for you to watch. And even though I know the stuff we talk about is pretty damn interesting, I want to remind you that we have a new certification session. Our spring session starts on March 9th.
For coaching certification,
Freedom Model Coaching Certification. So if you're interested in doing that, it's not too late. We'll be taking enrollments all next week for it. You go to thefreedommodel.org/certification to learn more. We also have a video up on YouTube now that is all about certification. So you can learn a ton about it. It's about 45 minutes long. So check that out.
Yeah, that's real comprehensive.
Yep. And you can also give us a call at 1-888-424-2626 or email us at info@thefreedommodel.org. And that'll all be, if you're watching this on YouTube, it'll all be in the description below, all those links. So
you'll notice I put a globe. We stole it out of Ryan's office.
Yeah. That globe's made the rounds though. It's been in the retreats. It's been up in my dad's. I think it started in my dad's office.
And the reason I wanted it in here is because we are creating a global movement, right? Yeah. The Freedom Model is a global phenomenon now, and we're on four different continents now with our coaches.
Yes. I want to thank everyone for their comments on our videos. Our videos are getting all over social media. They have started to get a lot more views and a lot more comments. Not all of them, you know, positive, but all of them good.
Controversial.
Controversial. We're starting the conversation, and that is our goal. And I know the last couple episodes have been about recovery, and I think there's more to talk about in that topic. I posted a video on the different platforms that was, there's no such thing as addiction. And the responses that we've gotten, and I posted that last week, people are very upset with me.
Yeah. So we're gonna go through some of the comments that we're getting on our videos.
Yeah.
Because they're great, even though a lot of it is vitriol and angry.
Yeah, I'm not gonna go through the ones that call us names and that don't show an intelligent discussion.
You know, even the ones that are intelligent can be a little bit caustic and have edge,
for sure.
Because we're challenging people's religion.
Yeah, their identity.
Their religion with recovery, because it is a religion, it's a belief system.
Yeah.
And so we'll go through. Now, this episode might get a little choppy visually because she'll have to be going through her phone and we'll probably have to edit some of that time out.
I want to address this one because this is a common one. I know it was on a lot of Mark's videos as well. And so just another pundit trying to profit off and exploiting the suffering of others. Somehow I don't believe this person was ever an IV heroin user. She just doesn't understand.
It's so strange because they automatically, that's a real common reaction.
Most common. It's you're just trying to make money off of suffering people and you have never been an addict, so you don't know.
And because we challenge the idea of addiction, right? This concept of compelled behavior. And so let me back up that it's really hard to develop a comprehensive discussion point based on a reel or a short, which is what we're doing. Now, some of the videos we've done have been 6 to 7 minutes long and are a little more comprehensive. But even that, it's so complex to people because I got to frame this out. The recovery religion is a grouping of ideas that has been proliferated now and as propaganda for 80 years.
Yeah.
So it's generational. It's part of our society. It's the part of the way we talk. Being a person in recovery, being an addict, being an alcoholic, none of that is objectively true, meaning there is no person that is compelled beyond their free will to do anything.
Right.
Mentally, you can be compelled, but physically, you can be put in jail or something like that. But when it comes to our mental status, there's no power by which we can control other people, and there's no substance that can control the content of your thoughts. So people freak out. They really freak out. And the first thing they do is they jump to the conclusion that we're trying to make money off of suffering, which is a strange leap to me.
Yeah.
Because
a lot of them, here's something that's really interesting, is when you do a little, you know, you start a discussion with this person, almost invariably these people work in recovery and they make their money working in treatment.
Yeah, it's a real case of projection.
It sure is.
And I think that there's a, if you work in the treatment industry, and some of you do.
Yeah.
And some of you are questioning why you're doing what you're doing. And the reason you're questioning it is because you know deep down in your heart that coercing and manipulating and forcing people through fear to behave in certain ways, especially in rehab. If you're doing an inpatient gig, yeah. It's all about manipulating people who really don't want to be there. And even those that want to be there find it very hard to give up their autonomy to an ethos.
Yeah.
And giving up your autonomy to an idea is a stretch. I mean, it's very hard to impose that into people. So when people work in the treatment industry, they feel horribly guilty about what they're doing, or they feel quietly guilty, and they know that what they're doing isn't quite right, but they feel this certain valiant sort of virtuous way about what they're doing, but they're confused at the same time. Now, how do I know that? Because that's how I felt.
Oh, me too.
In the early days when I was pushing the whole AA narrative, because inside I was going, this is fucking crazy. This doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really interesting because in the early years, when I was in AA, there was a group of women who all became counselors. You know, they were like, oh, you can go and in just 8 months or something like that, you can get your counseling certificate and you can work in treatment. And they all went to work in treatment. And I remember thinking even then, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Like, because I knew there was something terribly wrong with it. I knew. And here's the interesting thing. And we point this out a lot. And that is that the treatment model and the 12-step model is set up to make money because the best way to make money is repeat customers. Okay. So you're setting it up where the very first step in the 12-step program is I am powerless.
Yeah.
I am powerless. I had a guy actually say in the comments, you know, you're powerless over what? Right. Like he was like, I could hear he was kind of talking to me like I was a child.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, it says over alcohol, like, you know, like it says over alcohol, which would mean that alcohol is a living, breathing being that takes over my life, which is, when you think about it, really kind of strange.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's get back to the money thing. So people project out their their desire for financial security. Every human being has a certain amount of anxiety about financial security.
Yeah.
And so they assume that we are in it for the money.
Right.
We're in it for the money. And partially I am, because I have to make a living.
Right. It would be nice to be able to feed my family. For sure.
Exactly. So I don't apologize for doing this for 37 years. The difference is that I am very convicted about the truth. I'm convicted about what is the truth and what do I need to explain to people for them to get the truth. And in a lot of cases, unfortunately, I have to debunk the entire recovery model to do that, to get to the truth. And what is the truth about substances is so simple, and that is that you are an autonomous person that can move on and you've always had control of your behaviors.
Yeah.
But people don't know that.
So no, and really I gotta confusing. Tell you, it's not terribly lucrative. It's just not lucrative to show people that they are capable and to show, like, we don't shy away from saying, you don't need the freedom model. You don't need, I mean, the data is very clear that people, the vast majority of people, more than 90% solve their problem on their own. And before I hear the comments, those weren't real addicts and alcoholics, we'll address that later. No, these were people that fit the criteria for what is now known as substance use disorder, right? These people all solve their problem, the vast majority, with nothing. And the data is very clear. People do better without the 12-step program and without treatment. They solve their problems faster. They don't have all the, you know, every medication has side effects. Well, the side effect of the recovery industry is that you are not free. It is that you are sick forever and you will always need them, which for the treatment industry, cha-ching.
So it's interesting that the person says that we are bagging on recovery to make money.
Yeah.
When they are willing to accept being given a diagnosis and pay tens of thousands of dollars to go to rehab to be given this diagnosis. Now, here's what's interesting. The population that goes into treatment is relatively small.
Yes.
It's about in America, about 100,000 people are in treatment at any given point. That number fluctuates annually. But active people in rehabs is about that amount. But if you look at the population in general that needs the services of help, it's about 10% of the population, give and take, at any given point, right? Worldwide. And so that's a much bigger number. In Western culture, that's about 110 million people. So a very tiny slice of people is in treatment, is willing to pay for treatment, and then becomes a zealot of treatment. And then they get pumped out into the recovery society, this recovery cult, if you will. And when they do that, because they have paid and because they generally have a shitty experience in treatment, when we go against it, they immediately say, well, you're making money and you're bagging on the thing that helped me, even though I thought it sucked, you know, but it was the best there was. And I've given my money and I've given my allegiance, and it's very hard for me to do that. So Jane Doe, as she comes out of a treatment center, has given her mind, her body, her money, her resources, mm-hmm. her time, and all of this into this religion called recovery. And then we come along and say, you don't really need any of that. It's bullshit. Yeah. And they assume, because from their perspective, oh, you want money, just like that bastard that took my insurance money and double billed me at the rehab. But I was willing to do it. And now what's interesting is all the people outside of that sandbox don't react that way to our posts.
No.
Because they haven't made the investment. They haven't gotten fucked over. They haven't gotten fleeced by the treatment centers or the recovery cult. They haven't. So they haven't made that investment. So it's much easier for them to say, well, you know, this seems to make a lot of sense. I never really bought into the disease concept, and your research really seems to make sense, and it's very logical and positive. And the reactions, and so you can see in the comments, there are two pools of people, man. People in the religion, deeply entrenched, having invested all that pain and anguish. And when you pay, not only with being a heavy substance user, which has its own costs and pain, and all the money and resources that you've given it, and then you flip it over into the recovery society where all that money and pain is then, and coercion and conflict and ugliness about it, because it's an ugly business.
Yeah, it is.
It's an ugly business. That is a massive investment.
Yeah.
And they will defend it. They will defend it, because when you have a belief system that is that deeply bought into, when you have given your soul over to the recovery society, it's really hard when somebody challenges it. And you're going to assume that I and Michelle and Steve and Ryan are also trying to fuck you over, when we're not.
No.
And here's what's crazy. We're not trying to make another recovery model.
No.
You're so used to being shifted from one model to another, from harm reduction to down to the methadone clinic, and then over to long-term rehab, and then to a sober living house, and then to AA meetings, and then to NA, and this therapy and that therapy. You're so used to that shuffle and being victimized by it, that you assume we're just another one. But here's what's crazy. The freedom model doesn't do any of that. We're deconstructing that model so that you can just move on.
Yeah, I wanted to go to some of the. I'll do one more from this video, and then I want to go to a different video. And this is, she seems only acquainted with high bottoms or not real addicts at all. And so I said we would address the real addict comment, real addicts and high bottoms. Now, what I answered with was, it's very interesting that you would say that, because there is this whole group of people that are shuffled in and out of treatment, and then they go to meetings, and then they go back to heavy use, and they go and they're in the revolving door, which is very common. Everybody in the recovery world knows about the revolving door. Everybody in the recovery world assumes that relapse is part of recovery, because, you know, if it doesn't work, it's because you are so sick. And do you know the people that would end up with us? They were those people that recovery labeled as chronic relapsers, that you and AA, and I'm talking directly to the AA people, would basically shun and throw away and blame them. You would hand them $20 and say, go to the bar. You haven't hit your bottom yet. Those are the people that would end up with us. And we helped those people. Mm-hmm. We have incredibly high success rates with those people. And the reason is because recovery is a distraction from solving your problem. So I would posit, if you want to use high bottoms and not real addicts, this is the other part of that, real addicts. So if you posit that you're a real addict, and your only criteria for that is that you got sober with AA, how did you stop? How did you stop? Because I was told when I went to AA, just don't drink and go to meetings. And my question was, because I question everything and I was one of those people, ego run riot, whatever the fuck you want to call it, right? My question was, if I can choose just not to drink, why do I need to come to these meetings? Okay. So maybe you're the one that's not the real. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it makes no sense. When you start, and that's when we start getting called names, by the way, when we start making too much sense. Look, if you have found, and we have people that are on here that are like, I've got 40 years sober. Well, number one, I cannot imagine having 40 years sober in AA and worrying about what somebody stranger on the internet says. Can you?
No, and I probably wouldn't go onto a treatment center's website or social media pages and start ripping on them.
No,
like, I think that people automatically know that what they're doing is weird. Yes. I think they know that. Here's the deal. I think there's a tiny, 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 tiny minority of gurus that buy in full and.
Well, it makes them relevant.
And they are like a recovery zealot.
Yes.
Right?
Oh,
that
yeah.
They are the gurus of that religion of recovery, that construct.
And so they will defend it no matter what.
Yeah. And they sit in their high horse and they throw out jargon and stuff like that. And we get those people.
We get that all the time.
So I understand that they have a vested interest, but they're the ones making the money, right?
Yeah,
They're the ones making the power. They create the power hierarchy in the AA society, all this stuff. But that's a tiny minority of a minority of people that get over the problem.
They're really tiny.
Yeah. But the rest of the people, the reason they freak out is because deep down inside they go, fuck, that makes sense.
Yes.
I've thought that, but it terrifies me.
Yeah.
Because to think that you can be free requires a massive shift in your understanding, and they don't have the understanding, which is why we had to write a 470-page book to debunk all the horse shit that you're being fed.
Yes. And that brings me to another comment that we get, and that is, oh, I wish I had just known I could have just stopped.
Yeah. Oh, you're just saying it's just a choice. Well, you can just stop.
For sure.
It is just a choice.
People
do. It is just a choice when you debunk the lies. So one of the first things we say in the book is that anybody can moderate and people freak out. And I mean, anybody can.
Anybody.
And the facts are the facts. But we don't advise you do that until you read the whole book.
Yeah.
Because we don't know the level of unknowing that you have, the level of mythology that you believe. Do you believe you're an addict? Do you self-subscribe as somebody that can't ever drink and drug again? You know, there's so many myths that have to be undone before you should ever attempt to adjust your use. So there's a lot there.
There is a lot there. And then I want to address the people that can't, you know, well, this one specifically. This one was just posted an hour ago. I am an alcoholic. I am, of course, much more than that. But when it comes to my relationship with alcohol, which I like he said relationship with alcohol.
I did too.
I will always be an alcoholic. I cannot drink alcohol successfully and never will. Admitting my alcoholism is the first step towards recovery. It will always be an important part of my recovery. I don't ever want to forget it and try to drink again because that is insanity. So that's another assumption that people will take from us is that they're assuming that we're saying you should drink. They're assuming that because we say anyone can moderate and that it's important that you understand that we're also saying that people should. And we're giving people permission to go back and drink. And we're not doing that. Alcohol is a poison on a good day, right? So, but knowing what alcohol is and what it isn't is how you become free, right? Because believing, staying sober because you are afraid of it. It's weird. It's weird. It's problematic. I don't know how long this guy's been sober. He looks like an older guy. But when I went to AA at 22 years old, the idea that I would see these old guys who had been sober for years and years and years still talking about alcohol like it was this entity that was going to come out and grab them at a weak moment. To me, there was no flipping way that I was going to live afraid of alcohol for the next 60 years. I was not going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what's really interesting about that comment is the use of absolute language.
Yes.
He says, I can never I will always, you know, these descriptors that say, I am this, and there's no way that you're going to change the way I think about me, and I can't, I will never, I have to. I mean, it's every single thing he said. And what's interesting is the only part, well, first of all, his truth is his truth. So now that's become true to him.
Yes.
But he says something, the very beginning is so important. There's a crack in his armor already. And the crack in the armor is, I'm much more than this.
Yes.
Except for with alcohol. Now, this is really super, super important because I used to think shit like this.
Me too.
You know, we were in AA, and I'd say, I'm a pretty self-efficacious guy. I go out and I build businesses, and I've always done what I've wanted to do. And I threw the best parties, and I was always sort of this gregarious, action-packed dude.
Yeah.
And, but with alcohol and drugs, you know, somehow I got looped into this idea that it was the center primary problem of my life and would always be that. And somehow I'm different. If you have that language or that idea, and I'm saying this to the people watching, you're in deep trouble with mythology, because human beings aren't built that way. Absolutes, when you're talking human behavior, with the exception of a few things, don't exist. And I'll tell you what the few things are. We lay them out there. You have free will. Everybody does. That's an absolute. You're a thinking creature with free will. You are driven by your pursuits of happiness, fact. And we go through the whole theory of that in the book. And what is it? And you have autonomy. You have your own mind. You get to think for yourself. And so these are the three things that are absolutes. But even those things allow you to do anything you want. So when people say this substance somehow manipulates me into a situation where I can't have it, and you live by this ethos, you should kind of step back and go, wait, that's kind of strange. Why don't I feel like a Corvette is no different than a substance? It's a thing. These are things. So it'd be equally ridiculous to say that Corvette forces me to drive.
Yeah.
I can't stop myself. I can't be around Corvettes. I can't look at them. I can't go into a dealership. I have to go to meetings to stop them. That would be fucking weird, right? That would be kind of crazy. But alcohol is no different. It is a lifeless thing. Now, I'll tell you why you think it's different. Because when you ingest it, when you put it inside your body, you're not going to eat a Corvette. Okay. You feel different physically. So you have an active placebo. And this nuance is so hard for people to understand, but we break it down for you. We break it down.
But I want to go back to the Corvette, because if you've ever ridden in a Corvette going 80 miles an hour with a good looking guy, right, driving, it's pretty fucking awesome.
That's a great point. So
I mean, adrenaline.
Yeah, that's a great point. So the experience is your active placebo. So if you believed, like the ads, I use this in when we coach people. Here's a little lesson of the nuance of the freedom model. So I use the example of the Corvette, and for 40, 50 years now, Chevy has used ads that imply freedom, that when you drive a Corvette, you feel free, you feel younger. Now, a Corvette in its objective state is a ball of metal that doesn't do anything.
Right.
And until you inject your interpretation into that object, until you create a play in your mind, and then you get in the car, and then you feel the sensations, much like you're feeling the sensations of acetaldehyde in your brain tissue when you drink, you're feeling the wind in your hair, you're feeling all of that, and then you're interpreting that active placebo as freedom. It's not freedom. That freedom
is in a car.
That freedom is you interpreting. So when you interpret booze as, it gives me a license to misbehave, I have lowered inhibitions, I get to do this, I get to do that, I get to fight, I get to tell this person to fuck off, I get to feel beautiful, whatever it is. These are the nuanced arguments that the Freedom Model goes through to show you what is actually in play here and that you have been the interpreter all along for this experience. But you don't know that because you've been bought into the idea that it's the alcohol doing everything. Just like some people, I guess, might have a fetish with a Corvette and believe they need it to be happy.
Right. I mean, if you think about it, I could say riding down the road in a Corvette is no different than riding down the road in my Toyota, mm-hmm. right? And Corvette enthusiasts will probably blow up the comments with, are you kidding me?
That's a great point. If you went onto a Corvette forum, like the Corvette Owner Society and these, yeah. these sort of clubs that they have surrounding it, they would
be really mad.
They might be a little lighthearted about it because with drinking, it's a life and death scenario, right? Good. They've been taught that, you know, alcohol will kill you. And ironically, they also say that alcohol will also relieve you of all your fucking troubles.
It's the angel and the devil.
Yeah. Talk about a catch-all mythology yeah. and religion. It is a god and a devil. It is an angel and a devil. So yeah, it's a really interesting thing. There are no absolutes in human behavior. There's just interpretations.
So let me talk about the moderation. We'll close out with this idea that people can't, there are certain people, because there was a time I believed that. There was a time where we were looking at the research and we were seeing about half the people moderate. Like even with our own outcomes, we found that, you know, only about 60% were totally abstinent from, which was amazing, people that completed our program. But we learned that about half the 40% had successfully reduced their substance use to non-problematic levels where they no longer fit the criteria for any kind of alcoholism, addiction, substance use disorder, whatever, right? So they had reduced, you know, some of the people that came through were people that came through for heroin. And they were like, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't use heroin anymore. I'd never go back to heroin. But I drink occasionally and I don't have a problem with it, right? So we were seeing this, and now you see this everywhere. You know, they all of a sudden there was this California sober movement where people were going from, you know, IV drug use to marijuana, or, you know, wine, whatever. Like they were shifting their preferences, and their preferences naturally shifted from heavy use to less use, from using certain substances to using, you know, illicit substances, using legal substances, right? And that's normal. That is how people change. It is abnormal to take on a belief that this substance is out to get me. It's out to destroy my life. So, but it's all powerful and all wonderful. And, you know, do you see that? Like, it's still romanticizing a substance to say that if I ever go back to it, I'm totally screwed.
Yeah. It builds it up.
It makes it something that it isn't. That's and right. So to truly solve your problem, and I say this to people when they first start doing coaching with me, you know, especially people that come in and say, I can't use this. I can't do it. I have to be abstinent. And my question is always, do you want to be abstinent? Because if you don't want to be abstinent, you won't be.
Right.
You know that's true, right? And they're like, well, I don't want to be abstinent, but I have to. You don't have to do anything.
And your actions tell the truth. And usually when somebody is being coached by us, they are drinking and drugging.
They are.
And then they sit there and they say, I can't do this anymore. I have to be sober. I hate it. And that's just not true. So there's so much to unpack.
Oh, God.
But here's the awesome part. The awesome part about Freedom Model coaching is within 3 90-minute sessions, we can get somebody from being that screwed up with mythology to being completely free. And people say, that's not possible. Oh, now you're selling this miracle. No, I'm not selling anything. I'm deconstructing lies so you can see that you're capable. And that's it. That's all we do. And I can, in the first session, Michelle can too, all our coaches can. We can build the puzzle where we make a list of all your myths. You just talk. We just ask questions and you just talk. And I sit there and I write down, oh, there's a, that's chapter seven. That's chapter, there's chapter 13. And I go through and usually there's 8 to 15 good solid myths that have you completely fucked up.
Yep.
And then we just, I go, okay. And then I give homework assignments. We give homework assignments. And then we have our second session where they start to discover, oh my God, this all makes sense. And there's workshops and there's all these videos that we give them. And there's this process of deconstructing lies.
Yeah.
And when you deconstruct lies, what are you left with? The truth about you and the truth about alcohol. And that truth is incredibly simple. And so when we say, let's go full circle, when we say, yeah, it's just a choice, or yeah, you can just quit, you can. But if there's the level of the reaction that you have to me saying that is the level to which you have mythology blocking you from it.
Yeah.
So if I say, hey, Tom, it is just a choice. And you recoil and you go, fuck you, dude. You think I want this? Yeah. You think I want to stick a needle in my arm? You think I want to have AIDS? You think I want to watch my brother die in the chair next to me as we're shooting up? You know, and I go, no, I don't think you want any of that. I didn't say that, but it is just a choice. But right now, as you sit there, it's not, because somebody lied to you for your whole life. And you are totally, totally misinformed.
Yeah.
And you're dying from misinformation, not from anything else. So, yeah, we deconstruct the lies. And when you deconstruct them, you're left with only yourself making choices. And then it becomes very easy to move on from it.
Yeah. Choosing, it's just a choice in the same way that choosing to leave a long-term relationship is just a choice. Okay. It can be an incredibly confusing choice. It can be even a painful choice, depending on your level of beliefs and misinformation that you have. There is a reason that the industries, the alcohol industry and the recovery industry, are married. Okay. 10% of people buy the bulk of the alcohol. They make the industry all the money. When it comes to pornography, 10%, I'm guessing, of the people that pay for pornography make all the money.
Right, make 80% of the revenue.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Yep. So these industries have a vested interest in you believing that their products
are magical
and cause people to be addicted. And none of it is true. Do I think it's a grand conspiracy? No. I don't. I think it was born at a time when there were people killing themselves with alcohol and a lot of people didn't know what to do. And there was a, you know, way back in the day, opiates too. And, you know, there's always going to be this small group of people. And it was a very small group, quite frankly. It was, you know, even with opiates today, it's still just about 2%. So of people that ever used opiates, you know, go on to have struggle with them. With alcohol, it's about 10%. So, but now it is getting greater because of the awareness campaigns, because of the idea that this can take over your life. You can't get a prescription from a doctor without being told, oh, you're at risk for addiction. Right.
And talk about creating a social contagion.
Exactly.
It's unbelievable.
So the only remedy is for someone like us who's done the research is to tell people the truth. And that is, you're never out of control ever. No one gets addicted to something they don't like. They don't see value in doing. And if you may believe I've gotten to the point where I hate this, but that just means you're confused, because if you genuinely hated it, you wouldn't do it anymore.
Right. Right.
So yeah, that's what the freedom model is all about. And look, at we love your comments. We don't like to be called names. The one comment we didn't address, and we're running up on time, is you're killing people. And I wanted to address that one, because Mark's videos on recovery is bullshit have at least a dozen of those on every video. This information is harmful. It's killing people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that maybe that's what we'll do the next podcast on, because that's such a big topic.
It is a big topic. We do another 45 minutes on that alone.
Yeah. Yeah.
So thank you everyone for all of your support. I want to remind you that we are starting our next coaching certification session. If you, whether you solved your problem in the Freedom Model or without the Freedom Model, maybe you solved your problem on your own, maybe you went through the whole recovery rigmarole, and maybe you work in the industry and you're like, I got to get the hell out of here. You can leave that whole thing behind and still help people by becoming a Freedom Model certified coach. We want to talk to you. Okay. It is not too late to enroll in our spring session starting in March. So go to our website to look for that. Or we have a summer session starting in June. But I would recommend that you, if you want to do June or the fall session, which will start in August, I recommend enrolling sooner rather than later, because you will get access soon as you enroll to our online learning products and you can start learning right away. So.
All right, everybody. You have a great day.
Have a great day. Bye. Bye.